The following is an exclusive presentation of WI Garden Media, the voice of Garden Talk Radio. Coming up on the program today is all about pumpkin, as well as garden prep for next spring's garden. And our guest will be author and chef Valerie Rice, and will answer your garden questions. The hour is full, and it starts right now.
You are listening to the most informationally packed hour of garden-focused radio in the country and on the internet with your host, husband and wife team Joey and Holly Baird. This is the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show.
Welcome to the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show. Happy you're hanging with us for today's episode. I am your host, Joy Baird. Beside me is my wife, co-host, best friend, and gardening partner,
Holly Baird.
This program is for you, about you, to help your garden grow better, to maintain your landscape, grow healthier trees, make your grass look greener, as well as preserving what you grow. If you'd like to get a hold of us during the hour, you can certainly do that by two very easy avenues, one being the email address at gardentalkradio@gmail.com. That's gardentalkradio@gmail.com. You can get drop your message there. If you'd like to talk to us, you can do that at Garden Talk, 1-800-927-SHOW. That's 1-800-927-SHOW, 1-800-927-7469. If you can't get through, leave a message. We will call you back with the answer to your situation. Well, big show lined up for you today. We're going to get right into it and talk about pumpkins. We're getting to that time of the year, Holly, where it will be nights getting colder and pumpkins will be getting ripe, if not already ripe, on the vine.
Yeah, so there's a lot of different things you can do with pumpkins, and there's over 50 varieties of pumpkins.
Well, yes, multitudes of varieties of pumpkins, and Many people may think that, you know, pumpkins are just for carving and decoratory purposes, but there are other things that are very valuable that you can use pumpkins for.
Right. And so 95% of the pumpkin crops are grown in Illinois. Did you know that?
I knew that.
So that's kind of cool, or a fun fact, especially if you're from Illinois.
An Illinoisan.
An Illinoisan?
Yes.
Illinoisian?
No, it's not. It's an Illinoisan.
Okay.
Close enough.
Like Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
well, Abraham Lincoln wasn't born in Illinois.
No, he was not.
In Kentucky.
Right.
There's your history lesson for this morning.
History.
For today, boys and girls. pumpkins can be difficult to grow due to the fact that, one, they take up a tremendous amount of space, and two, they can and are susceptible to many diseases, most prevalently powdery mildew, which can really shut the plant down during any portion of the growth cycle. Now, pumpkins can be as little as 6 ounces or as large as about 2,500 pounds. I think somewhere in that range. I don't know what the current world record for pumpkin growing is, but it's upwards over a ton, I believe. That's a full-time job where you've got to take the seed and baby it and tent.
Yeah, you really are babying the pumpkin at that point.
And those seeds are extremely, extremely valuable and have a high commodity, a high price on them. So there's other things you can do with besides carving a pumpkin. We find that, you know, all pumpkins are edible. However, based on the type of pumpkin, makes it more of a pleasant or more pleasurable consumption of the pie or soup or whatever that case is.
Well, here's the thing is that there are pie pumpkins.
Right.
And so if you are going to grow pumpkins for making pie or pumpkin smoothies or whatever, you want to grow the pie pumpkins because they have a higher sugar content.
Yes. And, you know, we have grown what is called a Jardel pumpkin.
Yeah.
It's a blue skin pumpkin, very bright orange flesh inside, and the walls are about 4.5 inches thick, very small seed cavity.
Very meaty pumpkin.
It is the most smoothest, most delicate tasting pumpkin that you've ever eaten. Great for pumpkin pies. That's really what we have used it for. We'll get into how you can preserve these pumpkins momentarily, but you can eat a Jack Leonard pumpkin. However, these have been bred over decades for that quick, thin wall, easy to carve capabilities. That's the primary goal of
it's
a Jack
Leonard. It's more stringy too.
Yes, it's yeah, very it's
not,
stringy.
It's not meaty. So Jack Leonard pumpkins are bred to become Jack O' Lanterns, and then there's pie pumpkins, and then there's even like different decorative pumpkins. Some of them will have like the knots on the outside that make kind of cool decorations.
I think there's one called a peanut pumpkin that's got the sugar capsules on the outside. Those are good. You can make dumplings out of them. Or we made dumplings out of some kind of pumpkin one time.
I thought it was a Girardelle, but maybe something else.
Maybe something else, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, the seeds are edible. They can be roasted. Many people find that a very exciting portion of their fall is you can roast the pumpkin seeds and then you can season them however you want. You can also do what we have done in the past is make pumpkin flour and pumpkin seed flour.
This is an option for you maybe if you don't consume gluten or if you want a high fiber flour. Pumpkins themselves are high in fiber, and then when you dehydrate whether it be the seeds or the pumpkin, and then grind it into a flour, that's a high-fiber flour as well.
Now, this is not, I'm going to make a pie and I'm going to use it all pumpkin flour. There is a ratio, and if I remember correctly, it is like three parts pumpkin flour to one part.
No, it's one part pumpkin flour.
Flour, okay.
To three parts.
There's a ratio. You can't just use it all the pumpkin flour. And what pumpkin flour is, you take the pumpkin flesh, grind it up to smaller pieces, dehydrate it, and then grind it to a powder or a flour consistency, that's your flour. Same thing with the seeds. The seeds, you let them dry, you grind them to pulverize them to a powder, pumpkin seed flour. That's as easy as it is.
Right. So that is...
And there is a shelf life on these as well.
Right.
They will go...
just like any flour, it'll go bad.
Right.
It'll go essentially rancid because... It's a more natural.
Yeah, it's all natural.
I mean, it's not more natural, but it's because it's not like wheat, where wheat is made to dry and to store. Pumpkin flour is not necessarily made that way. So you could put it in your freezer to keep it fresh. That's an option, as opposed to just on the shelf to keep it fresh or longer.
But just like anything that you have in your home, there is a shelf life on it, and at a certain point, it will go bad unless you've bought a sandwich at a fast food restaurant and French fries that will sit underneath your child's booster seat for 7 years and still be as good as the day you bought them. Most of the stuff that you're growing or buying at the farmer's market, there's a short shelf life, and it will decompose and turn into compost material much more rapidly than what you may expect.
Right. So there's a lot you can do with pumpkins.
What can we do?
Well, one is you can whip up some pumpkin puree. So that sounds good. But if you... Like for pie. Or you can make like a pumpkin butter.
Oh, okay.
Where you add some pumpkin spices and some sugar. And it's, you know, something that you can just like put on some toast or something.
So back to the pumpkin butter... you cannot can pumpkin butter safely. However, you can apple butter safely because the thickness of it.
Yeah, it's more viscous.
More viscous. We made this mistake about a decade ago. We had canned pumpkin butter, and then we found out that it's not safe to do that. So we poured all that pumpkin butter out.
I think we froze a lot of it.
We froze it, but we had processed it not knowing it was not safe to do. Now, could we have consumed it and been okay? Sure, why not? But we wasn't going to take that opportunity to test how fortunate we may or may not have been. So that's one thing with pumpkin. If you're going to can pumpkin, you have to can it. You have to pressure can it. And you have to do it in cubes.
Right. So you want to cube it, and then you want to pressure can it. And when we say cube it, we say like 1-inch cubes.
Like large dice.
Right.
Yeah.
And this is because your pressure canner, your home pressure canner, only gets so hot and it can only get or penetrate into so far into a jar. That's why you don't want to can pumpkin butter either. So that's why cubing it and having you basically give it a chance with the water to get to the center of the jar to help purify the ingredients.
Now, whenever you can't pressure can it and then it's time to use it for something, you pop the lid off, you drain the liquid off, and that has already been cooked for you. It is already – you just take and smash it up and it's already basically pureed for you because the process in which you've canned it, it saves you time on the back end of the procedure.
Right. And this is something that if you were going to make like a pumpkin soup or a pumpkin pie or a pumpkin smoothie, all of those, you would use this canned pumpkin, pumpkin bread, anything that calls for regular canned pumpkin at the store, that's what you can use this for.
And the canned pumpkin at the store is not always, you have to really read the label, not always 100% pumpkin. They do, there are some manufacturers that incorporate up to 50% butternut squash in with the pumpkin to stretch the batch, I guess is what you would say. Now, talk about the pumpkin smoothies. You've made these before, and they are not bad at all because you've added, it's not pure pumpkin. Now, you've added some things in there, but it is a very good, thick, fulfilling, you're not hungry anymore after you drink it, smoothie.
Right. So typically what I add is I add a protein powder, whatever kind you want. I would suggest vanilla because it gives it that like nice creamy flavor. And then I will add a lot of times some yogurt. If the pumpkin doesn't taste super sweet, like say we didn't use a real sugar pumpkin, I would, or pie pumpkin, whatever, I sometimes add a banana and it doesn't really overpower.
You don't even notice
it. No, you don't notice it. It gets a nice pumpkin-y flavor, but the banana sweetens that pumpkin. And then some pumpkin spice, usually, so it kind of tastes like a pumpkin pie. If I don't use a little yogurt, I'll use like some almond milk or non-dairy milk. You can use dairy milk as well. So yeah, that's what I use. I think that's it.
That sounds about right. Yeah. Now, one thing that, you know, people like to juice anything they can get a hold of. We tried juicing pumpkin many years ago, and for whatever reason, there is this most horrible
it's
odor,
like, yeah.
And then the smell is the second kick in the rear end.
It tastes bad.
It tastes terrible.
Yeah, I would not. Maybe if you could juice pumpkin with something sweet.
Yeah, 1 ounce, one ounce of pumpkin juice. And 10 gallons of water, you should be able to cut it pretty good
that. Well, if you could juice it with something sweet. But the smoothie, back to the smoothie.
Yes, go ahead.
If you want it to be really cold, you can add ice. Or you can just like put your pumpkin.
Almost like a pumpkin milkshake.
Yeah. Or you can put your pumpkin, all the ingredients, keep those in the fridge. And then when you blend it up. I don't add ice to my smoothies. But when you blend it up. If you keep it on the fridge, it should stay pretty cold.
So how do we get to that preparation if we are not going to or do not feel safe or whatever the case is, reason being that you don't want to pressure can your pumpkin? You can cook it down, turn it into a puree, and then freeze it so it is ready to go. But you want to freeze it in a measurement in which you can use that whole measurement without having to thaw it, refreeze it, thaw it, refreeze it, thaw it, refreeze it.
Right. Yeah, you want to measure it. So if you know that like you use 2 cups of pumpkin for 2 people in a smoothie, that's how you'd want to freeze it. That would be best. Also, a lot of people will use pumpkin puree and feed their babies with it because it's like a really good baby food. I did this and I took some of those like silicone muffin trays, we don't have children, for my niece and nephew, and I put them in the silicone muffin trays. Froze it, and then I was able to pop those out, and then it was like a little disc, and my sister would thaw it and feed her children.
And you can always take, if you are a homesteader or you've got a farm, and you know that after the fall festival celebrations that there will be a lot of jack-o'-lanterns left laying around, there's a lot of avenues in which you can advertise, hey, I'll take your free old pumpkins for animal consumption, you know, whether... hogs or I think cows will eat some of it, goats, you know, there's a lot of different avenues in which you can get some free feed off of that as well. So a small snippet of what you can do with pumpkins as we get closer, whether you are growing them or you're going to a fall festival or a pick your own farm. Keep in mind what your end goal is and then what you can use it for after the accomplishment of the one goal is completed.
Right. So speaking of preserving pumpkins, or preserving in general, the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show is brought to you today by our sponsor, Walton's Inc. Listen, we know you care about where your food comes from. You might want to can, preserve, get a bunch of pumpkins. That's great. But what about the meat? At Walton's Inc., you can get all the equipment, seasoning, and supplies to make sausage, jerky, and any other meat product your way to your high standards. Want to make snack sticks that people will actually like? Walton's created MeatGistics.com, an informational site to help you make the best finished product. Walton's even has a full line of their own meat grinders, mixers, and sausage stuffers to help you go from animal to edible. Walton's is everything but the meat.
Well, when we come back, hang out. Do not go anywhere. Moments away. It's going to be, let's talk about how we can prepare for next spring's garden. You're listening to the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show.
Got a question for Joey and Holly? Send it via email anytime to gardentalkradio@gmail.com.
We here at the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show gardens understand that healthy soil is the key to a successful garden. We know that chemical fertilizer burns carbon out of the soil and kills the microbes needed for a healthy soil ecosystem. No worries. Chicken Soup for the Soil by Dr. Jims will stimulate life into your soil, supplying all the nutrients most fertilizers neglect. Rather than force-feeding water-soluble chemical fertilizer, we suggest feeding the microbes a smorgasbord of 100% biodegradable nutrients that your plants can consume when they need them. The nutrients are readily available to maximize their genetic potential. Chicken Soup for the Soil will increase the quality of the fruit and vegetables you grow. Visit drjims.com. That's drjims.com. Rinse Kit, your hose on the go. No pumping, no batteries, simply fill from your spigot or sink on your way out for up to 5 minutes of spray time anywhere. Spray it, wash it, Rinse Kit. Is your dog that's causing dead spots in your lawn? Dog urine can burn lawns and ruin the appearance of your lawn very quickly. Fortunately, our friends at Nature's Lawn has a solution for this problem with their Spotless Lawn product. Spotless Lawn's three-way action helps neutralize dog urine, helps move it through the root zone, and then helps the grass recover. If there's still life left in the grass, Spotless Lawn will help resuscitate it. Visit naturelawn.com and look for Spotless Lawn. That's naturelawn.com and look for Spotless Lawn.
Protect your plants against damage with a 3-in-1 plant guard and special blend fertilizer. Visit ivyorganics.com.
The Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show is brought to you by the following: Blue Ribbon Organics, Naturally Green Products, Ironwood Tool Company, Easy Step Products, Rinse Kit, Soul Brew Kombucha, Wild Delight, Rincon Vitova, Chip Drop, Bailbuster.com. Find all sponsors at the WisconsinVegetableGardener.com and thank them for their support. Welcome back to the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show. Thank you for hanging out with us today. Hope your day is going well. Ours is not too bad so far. You've got some problems. We've had problems in the past with our crops not being hydrated properly. And we solved that issue using the tree diaper this year.
Yeah, before you want to think about watering, if your plants could talk, they would tell you how maybe at this point that they have a few complaints, and one of them might be about,
if you haven't killed them because you didn't water them,
about not being properly watered, either too much or too little. How do you water properly? What did you learn? Well, you can take the guesswork out of that by using the tree diaper. Tree diaper is a revolutionary watering system that stabilizes soil moisture by taking up excess water and slowly releasing it when the plants need it. The tree diaper is filled with water from your rain or when you water, and slowly releases water over 3 weeks. No pipes, hoses, or electricity needed. Whether you're a first-time gardener or advanced, tree diaper will improve the way you water your plants. It's made in the USA. Check out all the sizes they have available at Tree Diaper. That's treediaper.com. Tree diaper will make your plants happy. treediaper.com.
So as the summer begins to wind down, some of you may be excited about this, others may be sad, and the rest of you may have no opinion whatsoever. But as gardeners, as outdoors people, we plan for the next season, whatever that may be. So we're going to talk about how we can start preparing now for our spring garden. So there's some things in which we want to start considering in order for preparation for next year. One is, Holly, what did good, what didn't do good, and do we have an explanation of why on both of those questions?
This is a good question, and I think a lot of people learned this summer about the importance of consistent watering.
Uh-huh.
We had a lot of drought in many places throughout the U.S., and I know, like, when we spoke at the state fair, somebody had asked us about our raised beds, and I said, get irrigation. If you're going to invest in the raised beds, also invest in irrigation, mm-hmm. because of the fluctuation of moisture, essentially.
And whether you're using tree diaper, water hoop, quick snap, drip works, based on the situation and the manufacturer, there are as sophisticated as no matter where you're at in the world, you can push a little button on your phone and it will turn the water on, or as simple as going over and turning the faucet on and then turning it off in 20 minutes, or like the tree diaper, you don't have to really do anything for your plants to get hydrated.
Right. And that's definitely something to keep in mind. I think another thing is soil test. Now, this wasn't something for us, but I know a lot of people, you know, they're always asking, is a soil test worth it? Should I do this? And I think if you have to ask the question, like, do I need a soil test? The answer is probably yes.
Yeah, you've got a plant that's doing something very abnormal, and it is sometimes because of a lack of nutrients in the soil or an abundance of nutrients, which is causing that plant to grow irregular, a lot of green foliage, not much fruit, potential too much nitrogen. A lot of other things can potentially cause the issues that you are seeing in your garden. Now, Holly, some people, I'm not naming names because I don't know names, but they will continue to practice the same method of gardening year after year, and the same results happen, and those results are not always good, but they continue to do that. What is that called?
Insanity.
There you go.
Yeah.
The definition of insanity is?
Doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results.
That's also a dating tip there for some of you. Yeah. If the same thing continues to happen, maybe you're the common denominator, not the person that you're trying to date. But that's a side note for a different time, different place.
Right. Right. Exactly.
But so, if you continue to, you know, plant the tomatoes in this method, this procedure, and you still get crummy harvest, you need to figure out, maybe I'm doing something that I shouldn't be doing, and ask questions. And there's no, if you don't know the answer to a question, it's not a stupid question to ask.
Right, right. I agree. Especially when it comes to gardening. I mean, we even have issues that we have to sometimes do some research on.
We've reached out to some very large names in the industry and said, hey, here's what's going on. Can you help us? Because we are out of ideals and resources of why this is occurring.
Right. So that's something to keep in mind.
And this is part of the rotation of crop problem potentially as well.
Yeah, you want to rotate your crops. Especially crops like root – one is root crops, not necessarily like potatoes or carrots or anything like that, but onions, garlic, shallots, anything in that family.
Leeks.
Leeks, you want to rotate. I don't know why, but you want to rotate. I'm assuming that it must be something that like maybe they leave something back into the soil or some sort of situation like that. But you want to – yeah, you want to rotate those crops.
Well, in our situation, we have 8, 10, 12 large raised beds. How does one rotate crops if they are dealing with a size such as a 4x4 raised bed or in ground 4x4, 16 square feet, where space is very, very limited in which you can't move it across the yard. You can only really move it 2 feet to the left.
Right. So that is a good question. If you can't move it far, then you should just move it as you should, as you can.
Don't put it in that same
just
spot.
Just don't put it in the same spot. So if you have, like, say you have six rows that are right next to each other, just move everything over a row and then put that other end row to the front.
You've
whatever.
Done the best that you can with with what you have to work with.
And, I mean, I grew up with, like, a 4x4 foot garden. And
I keep hearing about this postage stamp of a backyard, and I've seen one picture of a pumpkin that you sort of carved. It looks like a recycling symbol.
The Chase and Arrows.
The Chase and Arrows, yeah.
I have another picture of me holding a zucchini.
Yeah, I've seen that, but there's a lot
you
of stories.
Take a tour?
That, yeah, I would like to. There's a lot of stories in your family that people don't want to talk about. The rhubarb in the ground, nobody wants to talk about it. I don't know what happened there. Can't grow rhubarb in the ground because some horrible thing happened 35 years ago. Bringing compost in.
Yeah, that's very smart. And that's another thing is building your soil. So maybe you're like, I'm having these issues and
I've grown in the same spot for 37 years and just threw a handful of fertilizer in at the time of planting every year. What am I doing wrong?
You need your soil, essentially is what it is. That's the life blood of the plants. Just like us, you know, we have to eat things. The plants want to have good soil.
But what kind of compost is best? Should you use your compost or should you invest in purchasing compost, not necessarily in a bag from a big box store, but a formulated mix from your local independent garden center? If you have compost that you've made yourself, and we all can never make enough compost, have you composted it safely or correctly to where it is heated up to the appropriate temperature in order to kill the weed seeds, that you're not broadcasting the seeds back into the garden of weeds and then now you've got a yard instead of a garden?
Well, that's what's important, is you need to know what's in your own compost and if those seeds are going to be alive or dead. So if you want to use some of your own compost, you could, but you could also put it like at the bottom of a raised bed, or even like if you wanted to kind of supplement a flower bed or something at the bottom of that, and then that could be helpful too.
You'd be wise about it if you are not certain that it is 100% seed free. If you get a grow bag from Rootmaker, use coupon code RADIO21, save 10% on your order, and fill the bottom 2 or 4 inches with your compost, and then fill the rest of the 12 inches with store-bought or garden center's compost, and you're using it as fill, basically.
Yeah, you're using it as fill, but at least you're using it for something. If you know that it's going to be hopefully weed seed-free, you have a pretty good shot that you think it would be.
You've turned it. It's got the right temperature. I give you a thumbs up because we are not very on schedule with that in our garden.
We're pretty lazy composters, but at least we do it, right? Can we get some credit for that?
Let's talk about mulch here. Mulch is one of the easiest and should be one of the most utilized materials in your garden. And in the fall, you have ample opportunity to acquire as much mulch as you could possibly care to acquire, meaning leaves and straw. Now, the leaves we all know where the leaves come from. And what we have done and continue to do from ground garden transitioning to our raised bed gardens is acquire the leaves on our property as well as in the street and pour over top and hill over top and mountain over top of our raised beds by 2 or 3 foot in the fall. And by spring, that has broke down and, went from 3 foot to about a foot. And then as the season progresses, it feeds the soil, and by June you can't tell that we brought 65-40 gallon trash can fulls of leaves in because it's all fed back into the soil. Now, we're not mulching at all, we're just dumping the leaves on the raised beds,
right?
And straw is another avenue in which you can use as a mulch. Now, in the fall, everybody has the hay rides, the fall festival parties, and even after Christmas, a lot of the nativity scenes are constructed with straw bales, and those are tossed to the curb in urban settings. And you can go by and pick those things up and put in your car. They might be a little heavy, but they would work great as a mulch material for your garden.
Yeah, you can pick that up, and you can put it in your shed or garage or wherever. And then you can have mulch, or you can mulch it. You can, if it's not sopping wet and you can get it apart, you can mulch right then and there for the put it down in the fall, and then it's ready for the spring.
You know, straw bales are typically, I don't know, between $5 and $8. What we're seeing right now at the stores, if you got a deal with a farmer, that you can probably get a better rate. But in the fall, the Halloween season, you can take those straw bales, and if you don't want to use them as mulch, you can set them up in your garden and get ready to use them for a straw bale garden in the spring. You don't want to condition them right now, but you can set them at where they're going to be next spring, so you're ready to go. All you have to do is get Bale Buster from Learn to Grow a Straw Bale Garden and condition it, and away you go. You're already two steps ahead of everybody else.
Right. So then you also can organize your tools.
Oh, but I just dig them out when I need them.
Yeah, that's fun.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And that's our method, and it's not fun.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know we ever had this tool.
Yeah.
Where did that tool go from?
Yeah. So you can go through your tools, you can clean them off, you can put some oil on them to get them ready for next year.
Like an olive oil or a kitchen
oil. Yeah, you can use like a cooking oil.
Some people will use like a motor oil, a petroleum product, but you know, if you're really a true organic gardener, you would be putting a petroleum product on your shovel and then putting the shovel in the soil.
No, you can use like an olive oil, cooking oil.
And some people, it's whatever it is. So I'm just saying some people are very concerned about what they do in that situation. Other people, it's just protecting the metal from rust. And then we have to look at our raised beds, if we're building raised beds, and what maintenance may be needed for them.
Yeah, you can look at, you know, are these boards splitting? Does something need support? Did something shift? Like, we made a raised bed out of a door we found in the attic.
Yep.
And a lot of that was, like, basically pressure fit. And I noticed
it's hard wood. It's not like particle board.
Right. No, it's hard. Right. It's like an authentic wood door.
Probably worth a lot of money. We cut up. Probably cringed when they saw
it. It could be, like, over 100 years old.
Yeah, if you want to see that video, you go to our parent website, the WisconsinVegetableGardener.com, and in the search bar, you put in raised bed made out of a door, I think is the best way to search for it.
That sounds right.
Yes. And
That's an option. But that has kind of fallen apart a little bit.
It worked for one season.
Yeah, but if you wanted to maintain the structure of that, we could probably just kind of piece it together somehow. But it is an option. So if you have regular raised beds, maybe you need to replace a board. Maybe you need to, I don't know, put some more nails in, or maybe you need to replace a portion of the board. Top off the beds. Yeah, yeah. You might want to top off the beds in the spring, but
if you put the leaves on top of the beds now, you can top them off and then put the leaves, and then you're already ready to plant in the spring. Well, speaking of preparation for the spring, summer is nearly over, Holly, and the kids are back in school, and the nighttime temperatures in some places are getting cooler, and for the rest of us, that time will come. And many of us have forgotten about our yard.
Yeah, just because it's fall, we don't want to forget about our yards and those evil Japanese beetles. They may be gone, but they're not far. Not only did they feast on your roses and berries this summer, they laid eggs in your turf so that they can start again next year. You want to take a stand with Phylum's Grub Gone. Grub Gone is a non-chemical BT product that targets scarab pests and their larvae. Simply apply the granule with a spreader, irrigate into the soil, and then let the naturally occurring bacteria do its job.
Not only is Grub Gone easy to use, but it is the only non-chemical choice that effectively controls those grubs in your yard. And the best part about it, it's non-toxic to bees, butterflies, and other beneficial insects. In fact, Grub Gone has zero label restrictions when it comes to being used around flowers. So get your hands on some Grub Gone from PhylumBioProducts.com, the natural choice. That's PhylumBioProducts bioproducts.com. When we come back, author and chef Valerie Rice will be with us. You're listening to the Garden with Joey and Holly radio show.
Have a garden question? Give Joey and Holly a call now or anytime 24/7. Just dial 1-800-927-SHOW. If you can't get through, leave a message and they will call you back. Call now 1-800-927-SHOW.
Pomona's Universal Pectin is a high-quality pectin that gels reliably with low amounts of any sweetener. If you're trying to reduce the amount of sugar in your diet, you'll love Pomona's Universal Pectin. Now you can make healthy homemade jams and jellies sweetened to your taste. You can use sugar or honey to sweeten. Pomona's Universal Pectin keeps indefinitely when stored in an airtight container. Easy to use, versatile, and comes with directions and recipes in every box. Find out more and where to buy at PomonaPectin.com. Also available at natural food stores and online.
Straight from the farm, fields, and briar patch, Piper and Leaf Artisan Tea is a tea like you've never imagined it. Get our award-winning tea delivered right to your front door and become part of the Piper and Leaf family. Free shipping over $75 at PiperandLeaf.com. Did you know that all flour is not created equal? Janie's Mill carefully stone grinds all their certified organic wheat, rye, corn, buckwheat, and heirloom, and ancient grains so that you get every bit of taste and nutrition nature intended. Some flours really are better than others, and you deserve the best. Get it at janiesmill.com.
Brought to you by Blue Ribbon Organics, providing locally made organic compost and soil blends for gardens, farms, landscaping, and more. Visit BlueRibbonOrganics.com or call 262-497-8539 to find their products nearest you.
Tired of dealing with bugs but don't want to use harmful chemicals to repel them? Naturally Green No More Bugs is all natural and plant-based. No more chemical bug repellent. Use it around your home and on you, indoors and out, DEET-free, and will not stain, repels mosquitoes, ticks, fleas, roaches, ants, flies, and more. No More Bugs is the answer to what is bugging you. Stop using harmful chemicals and use what is safe for you, your family, pets, and the environment. For more information, visit natgreenproducts.com. natgreenproducts.com.
The Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show is brought to you by the following: Simply Earth, Seed Savers Exchange, Quick Snap Sprinklers, Water Hoop, Timber Pro Coatings, Bloomin' Easy Plants, Pomona Universal Pectin, Ivy Organics, Tiger Torch, Happy Leaf LED, SeedLink. Find all sponsors at thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com and thank them for their support. Welcome back to the Garden with Joy and Holly radio show. Valerie Rice, moments away, but just because summer's winding down, that doesn't mean the yellow jackets have decided to go home for the winter. They can still be very aggressive, and Rescue has a product that can prevent you from being injured from them.
During these dry summer months, you will notice more aggressive yellow jackets flying around. They also like to stick around in the early fall. They're looking for your barbecue meats, your sweet drinks, as well as water sources. You want to keep them at bay with the Rescue Yellow Jacket Traps. Rescue Yellow Jacket Traps are an eco-friendly do-it-yourself option to keep those stinging pests away from you and your guests or whoever is around. Those traps use a powerful lure for the yellow jackets and will not attract beneficial honeybees. They are made in the USA. You can go to rescue.com where you can find all the rescue products, that's yellow jacket traps and more at rescue.com.
They may not be able to prevent you from getting injured, but they will certainly give the bugs or the yellow jackets something to occupy themselves with. Holly, let's go to the hotline and bring in our guest for this week.
Valerie Rice is an author, blogger, and very passionate about seasonal cooking and more. Her new book, Lush Life, Food and Drinks from the Garden, came out this year. Welcome to the program, Valerie.
Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for taking time out of your day. And I know that not only you're going to educate Holly and myself, but all of our listeners across the country. And I'll start with this right here. What exactly is seasonal eating, which is most people might be familiar with, but also expand on what seasonal drinking is?
Well, it's so fun. You know, seasonal eating and drinking are just really about flavor, right? You know, you guys know this, you know, just in your garden that you, when you grow things, they just taste better on automatically. So I think it's just really about, you know, getting the best tasting food you can get your hands on. And, you know, when I planned my first garden, I was, you know, growing things that I was interested in, but I wasn't necessarily growing things that my family was interested in. So it was a big learning lesson in that regards. And we, you know, then we just kind of had to dig deep and plant things that we all like to eat and with flavor in mind. And really, you know, the garden lends itself to such great flavor and such beautiful food and drinks. And so it was really important for me when we put the book together that we created plenty of recipes for cocktails and mocktails and how to utilize all that beautiful produce that tastes so great in the backyard. So, and, you know, I really wanted it to come from an approach of, you know, a home cook and not, you know, when you're at home, you don't have access to all those ingredients that those amazing bartenders have, but you do have access to beautiful produce that tastes great. Just with very simple, you put some, you know, your favorite gin together and you muddle some lemon verbena and sparkling water and you're on your way to a beautiful, delicious cocktail with only like three ingredients.
Now with your cocktail making, is there a process where you know that these ingredients are going to go together, or is there some experimental going on that you go on, hey, this worked out really well, but we're never going to do this again because it was horrible?
Well, I think it definitely depends on how many cocktails you've had. but no, I think, you know, that old adage of like what grows together goes together mm-hmm. is such a great learning lesson when you're experimenting. And yeah, I mean, there's always, I think that's why if you just keep things simple, then they're going to be delicious every time. You know, you have like cucumbers right now and mint and that goes great in a cocktail together just with some tonic and vodka. So, you know, it's, you don't have to, you know, be mixing all these crazy things together just to have a great cocktail. So
now a lot of people, maybe they want to expand their seasonal palette, but they're not quite sure how. Maybe they're like, you know, I only have so much gardening space, but I'm curious about this. How can people expand their seasonal palette?
Well, you know, that's such a good question, because I think it's really, like I said earlier, it's really important to grow something that your family and you like to eat, right? But you can grow things, you know, that you can, I like to grow things that I can't easily access. And so that being said, you know, tomatoes are very accessible. You can get them at any grocery store, but you have access to Sun Gold tomatoes, which are just amazingly delicious and like over the top with flavor. And so for me, it's always about seeking out those amazing seeds and starts that you can plug in and have really special things like a green zebra tomato, or, you know, a San Marzano over your traditional Roma tomato. So just seeking out those interesting things, I think, is a really great way to expand your palate. And then from there, it's kind of contagious, right? You know, you like right now we're planting, you know, pink celery, and my whole family loves celery, but let's try the pink one because it's just more different. It has like slightly different flavor. So I think that's like really good. Like if you like an ingredient, then kind of seek out those, like, you know, the purple cosmic carrots I planted today, and, you know, just plant all those interesting things that you can't always access very easily at your local grocery store.
And I think you said it quite well there, that, you know, there's more than just orange carrots and red tomatoes. They're the palette of a Cherokee Purple or a Black Creme or a Brandywine is undistinguishable. I mean, it's incomparable to a traditional red tomato that you would normally kids think, oh, tomatoes are always red. Tomatoes come in basically every color of the rainbow, and they're amazed by what can be grown in their backyard.
It's true. And, you know, you start off with baby steps, right? You might go to the nursery and pick a few things, and then, you know, then it's contagious from there. Like, oh, maybe I can seek out some other things or find an amazing seed catalog. And then you have access, your whole world opens mm-hmm. up. And, you know, those people working at the nurseries are so knowledgeable, and they're going to steer you in the right direction too. And also in my book, we have planting guides too. So it was really, when we were putting the book together, I wanted to do an introduction of like what our life really looks like here in Santa Barbara and what are the things that we make on repeat in the seasons. But then also, gosh darn it, get to work because you have to plant for next season too. So I wanted to have a chart. So you're eating tomatoes right now, but we're planting beets too. So it was really important for me to have both, because I think a lot of cookbooks talk about naturally what is in season and to cook from it. But it was really important for me to put that garden spin on it and showcase some really interesting varieties of just different things that I've learned in the 20 years of gardening, like the different things that I've learned that taste great and are fun to seek out.
and you growing in Santa Barbara, for many of our listeners, can you describe like how big of a challenge that is? You're growing almost year round, intense heat and very little water. That's got to be a really big challenge for you.
Yeah, it works well with growing tomatoes, I'll tell you. I think the best tomatoes don't need that much water. But, you know, we're lucky here in Santa Barbara because we're coastal. So mm-hmm. we don't have, you know, the Inland Empire or, you know, San Joaquin Valley. It's really hot in the summer. But here we have a very moderate climate. And so it really does allow you to grow year round, which makes me so excited. But it does, right? It takes a lot of effort and forethought and trial and error. But really, like if you just kind of stay on it and you move the things, like I don't know how you guys are right now, but I've just gone through the process of pulling out a lot of my tomatoes. They just were underperforming and didn't look good anymore and really weren't, you know, fruiting. And I had some blossom end rot. So I pulled a bunch of things out and I've been planting the new stuff for fall. And I've already added for fall. You know, one of the things that's really important to keep in mind when you're growing a four-season garden is that, you know, you can have your tomatoes growing and your cucumbers growing, and then you can plant some leafy greens underneath so it gets a little bit more shade. And then when you pull the tomatoes out, you have those that are already planted and ready to go.
Definitely. So, yeah, you kind of touched on your book a little bit, but your book, Lush Life, Food and Drinks from the Garden, it's a cookbook. Aside from, you know, that seasonal eating, what will inspire our readers to pick up a copy and what's something unique or different in it that would intrigue them?
Well, I think it's unique and different because it encompasses all the three things that we've been talking about, eating, drinking, gardening, all in one place. And I really do a deep dive in the recipes, and they're my tried and true favorite recipes that we make on repeat. And they're just really accessible too. It's also important for me not to like have a bunch of crazy ingredients in something. I wanted something that people could really cook from simply. And because really the best food, the most seasonal food is the most tasty food, right? I mean, mm-hmm. you don't need to do a lot to a, you know, tomato to make it taste good. You slice it, you put a little sea salt. And if you have some chives in your garden, you can sprinkle those on top too. And you're on your way to a beautiful side dish. So make a simple protein and you really haven't done a whole lot of work, right? So that was really important for me to have those kind of simple recipes and then have the cocktails and then the garden notes as well throughout.
Well, I want to ask you about wine. Many people aren't sure about different wines or wine pairing. What are some ways for people to become more familiar with that genre of drink?
Well, I think you have to go with an open mind into wine, right? And it's really powerful. And it's a very powerful experience to know somebody or to have a great wine shop in your neighborhood, somebody that you trust. And you can talk to. So I think it's really important also when you go to a wine shop and you tell them what you're cooking and be honest with them. Say, I want a $30 bottle of wine or I want a $15 bottle of wine. And this is what I'm making, and let them inspire you. They're the very, very knowledgeable. And I think we don't ask enough when it comes to wine. And so there's so many, you know, intelligent, thoughtful people that this is what they do with their whole life is picking wine for people and picking wine for their shop. So they know what's going to be best and they want you to come back. So they're going to make a good recommendation. And I think that's just such a great place to start if you're not comfortable in the wine world. And then once you get to know them, then have them put like a few together for you. Like say you really like Chardonnay and you could get some suggestions of that. And you say, well, maybe now I want to try something else and let them guide you and let them use their knowledge to guide you.
That definitely makes a lot of sense, especially if it's something that maybe you cook a lot, you can figure out the pairings and then you have a winning pair, right?
Absolutely.
So what do you think is the most versatile garden vegetable to cook with? Maybe that you find is one that you always just like constantly are always finding lots of uses for.
Okay. Well, without a doubt, it's wild arugula for me. It grows so easily. You can't find it hardly anywhere. You find a lot of the conventional arugula around. You can macerate it and put it in a cocktail. You can saute it. You can have it raw just with like some beautiful Parmesan cheese and some wonderful Tuscan olive oil. You can, it grows the most beautiful flowers that are yellow, and they're really tasty. They taste like arugula, but they're a lot sweeter. And so I just think it's so fun to have something like that. And then you can grow it in a pot. You can grow it in the ground. You can grow it in your veggie beds. And then you just cut it and it grows back again. So it's really simple and easy. And that's something that is year round growing in my garden.
Well, Valerie, we greatly appreciate the time you've offered us. You've certainly educated Holly and myself's mind on all of this. How can people find out, how can our listeners find out more about you, where to get your book, how to get a hold of you if they've got questions?
Well, you can find me on Instagram at Eat Drink Garden, and you can also find me on my blog, eatdrinkgarden.com. And the book is on Amazon, but it's also available on my website as well.
Well, greatly appreciate the time you've offered us, not only Holly and myself, but all of our listeners from across the country.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's just a joy to meet you.
Absolutely. And when we come back, it's going to be your garden questions, our garden answers. This is the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show.
Have a garden question? Give Joey and Holly a call now or anytime 24/7. Just dial 1-800-927-SHOW. If you can't get through, leave a message and they will call you back. Call now 1-800-927-SHOW.
The number one key to healthy, productive plants are the roots. Starting from seed to full-grown plants, RootMaker.com has the answer. From seed starting trays with an innovative design that air prunes the roots, creating a fabulous root system, never again will you have root-bound plants, to multiple gallon grow bag sizes to raised beds. RootMaker.com has your grow needs covered. Visit RootMaker.com. Use coupon code RADIO21 and get 15% off your entire order. You move your lawn sprinklers all over the yard, but you always end up putting them in the same spots. Why not just bury them there? Out of sight, always ready to use, pre-adjusted to water the precise areas you want. Quick Snap Sprinklers makes it easy. In-ground sprinklers without the hassle or expense of laying pipe. Put the sprinklers anywhere in your lawn or garden. Snap on a hose to supply the water. Water on, it pops up. Water off, it drops below ground. You can mow right over it. You can have a buried sprinkler system up and running in just minutes. Each Quick Snap saves thousands of dollars. They install in minutes and operate for years. Visit quicksnapsprinkler.com.
Hello, I'm Joey Baird from the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show. If you're looking for merchandise for the program, you can go to thatismyshirt.com and get shirts with our logos on it. If you'd want to go a different route, they have a lot of comical, logical, and witty sayings on shirts that you can wear that makes a statement. From valedictorian from Common Sense University to I Heart Compost to Don't Be Just Average Today and a number of other great sayings. It all can be found at thatismyshirt.com. thatismyshirt.com. Sizes from small to 5 extra large and multiple colors per shirt to choose from. thatismyshirt.com.
The Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show is brought to you by the following: Pro Plugger, Dripworks, Walton's Incorporated, Tree Diaper, Janie's Mill, Phylum Bioproducts, Chapin Manufacturing Incorporated, Nature's Lawn and Garden Incorporated, Deer Defeat, Dr. Jim's, Root Maker. Find all sponsors at thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com and thank them for their support. Welcome back to the Gardening with Joey and Holly radio show. Time for your questions, our answers. You've got one. You can send it on over via email, gardentalkradio@gmail.com. That's gardentalkradio@gmail.com. If you'd like to talk to us directly, you can do that as well, 1-800-927-SHOW. Toll-free coast to coast, 1-800-927-7469. We'll see how many we can get through to the top of the hour, Holly.
I have an overwhelming amount of cherry tomatoes. Can you can them or have any other suggestions?
Well, you can them, correct on that?
You can can them. You have to peel them, so
may not be as much fun as you once thought.
No, but if you have like a food mill, you can put them through that And then you can make like a tomato soup, sauce, whatever. So that is an option. You can throw them in with like your other tomatoes if you are going to can them. Another thing is you can dehydrate them.
Oh, yeah. Dehydrate. Now, if you've never dehydrated, listen up here. I've got a little secret for you. If you've never dehydrated tomatoes and you've only ate fresh tomatoes, dehydrate some tomatoes, whether with a dehydrator or in your oven. It's like sweet pieces of candy that's healthy for you. It is very, very – you think a homegrown tomato tastes good? You wait until you dehydrate that homegrown tomato. Even better.
It's very good. I agree.
Even better. We're going to dehydrate. We went through 8 trays. We're going to do another 8 trays just because – and the cherry ones work.
We didn't go through 8 trays, did we?
Yeah, we are – well, oh. They're not counting, neither are we. But it was even – and we tried a green tomato, and it tastes just as good dehydrated as the ripe tomatoes did.
Right.
Interesting.
What do we do with this green tomato? Dehydrate it.
Yep. Yeah. You definitely, if you're not dehydrating tomatoes, you're missing out on something. You should at least try it once and get the t-shirt, and you will be happy that you did such.
The t-shirt.
The t-shirt. Did it, done it, got a t-shirt. You know that? Mm-hmm. All right. Next question. I saw that you have used pine needles in some of your videos and photographs, and they are brown and very dry. I have a huge evergreen tree, and I would like to use my free needles as mulch. Can I use them as they are green, that they've come off the tree, by putting them around certain beds and roses primarily? Is that okay? Can you do that?
Yeah, you can. I don't see why you couldn't.
They're going to dry very quickly once they come off the tree anyway. The myth is that pine needles will make your soil acidic. Now, true, the pine needles on the tree are extremely acidic. But once they are put down on the ground or mixed in your compost pile, about 10% of the total volume, so there's not, you know, because it takes a while for these things to break down. By the time they get to a soil consistency, the pH level has neutralized. So it doesn't affect your soil pH level at all. It will take a couple of years to break down, but you're totally fine. You don't have to worry about it. It's not going to mess your soil up. So there you go. Is that okay? You seem...
No, that's fine.
Yeah, okay.
That's fine. So the next question is I want to get a watering can as they are on sale right now. What recommendations do you have? Material, spout? Thank you. I would say one is make sure that you think about the size. If you buy a huge watering can and you can't lift it with the water in it, then you might want to take more trips and go smaller.
Because they've got like half gallon, gallon and a half, 2.5 gallons, and there's probably larger than 2.5 gallon units.
Right.
But, you know, there are, yeah, you can't, you don't want to overwhelm yourself.
Right. Another thing is if it's something that you are like, you know, this watering can is pretty, I like it, it makes me feel good, then, you know, if you like the aesthetic,
right,
I would say go for that. We like metal watering cans.
With the exception that the spout would be removed, that the spout can be removed.
Yes.
The watering can, the metal one we have, the spout cannot be removed and it gets clogged all the time. So get one that you can unscrew that spout and clean it out. Or if you can get one that has multiple different shower capability, you know, like a little dial, I don't see nothing wrong with that. But also the key is don't leave it outside all the time, plastic or metal. It doesn't work very well. And, you know, like you said, a small one's okay. You know, a small is really a large with a little extra walking.
Right. I didn't know you were so passionate about watering cans.
Well, it's the lifeblood of our garden. You got to, yeah.
I know.
But I mean, yeah, so hopefully that will help you make a decision that's best for you. Size, material, make sure you can lift it, and then make sure you have a spout that is removable so you can clean out that very easily. So, there you go. We got time for one more, Holly.
My friend Gary asked me, he said, I saw your very successful garlic. I was not so successful this year. He lives on the other side of the state.
Of Wisconsin.
He wants to know when to plant his garlic, and then also any varieties that we recommend for flavor.
Spanish Roja is a great flavor to have. And then you plant it the first Saturday in the northern areas of the United States, the first Saturday in October, and you get it established, roots established before the first frost. You'll get a little bit of top growth on that plant, but it'll be fine. So Spanish Roja and about 2 to 4 inches deep, and you'll be just fine. Well, we are out of time, and we thank you for yours. Miss any portion of this program, would like to revisit it? You can do that by going to your favorite search engine and typing in the Gardening with Joy and Holly radio show, or you can send us an email at gardentalkradio@gmail.com, and we will send you the link to this program. Do not miss next week's show. Be sure you remember, tune in. We're going to be talking about how you can get your tomatoes to ripen before the first frost in your area, as well as perennial plants that you may want to consider growing in your garden next year and for the years to come. Our guest will be author Rebecca Lewis, and will answer your garden questions. So until next week, for
Holly Baird,
I'm Joy Baird, and we will see you in the garden.